We're talking about how to quit a nicotine habit here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The WHO, the World Health Organization, warns that COVID-19 poses significant risks to smokers because of the way the infectious disease attacks the lungs. The WHO says there's evidence that smokers are more at risk of developing the most severe coronavirus symptoms than people who do not smoke. Are you in a smoking cessation program? How is it going? How is stress caused by the pandemic affecting your desire to reach for a cigarette or to vape? What do you do instead? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Doug Jornby is Director of Clinical Services for the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at UW-Madison. He's a clinical psychologist and professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Doug, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
How does the pandemic complicate the matter to try to quit a nicotine habit, to try to quit smoking?
Well, you certainly hit it on the head talking about the fact that it's a novel source of stress and has been now for several months for a lot of people. And of course, we know that people who are smoking, you know, one of their go-to ways of coping with that is to pick up a cigarette. So it's certainly been a challenge. On the other hand, I think it also poses a lot of opportunities for people as well.
What types of opportunities do you see at this moment?
Well, when you think about, you know, what are some very common triggers for people, being in the workplace, even though most workplaces in Wisconsin have been smoke-free for some time, what that's done in a lot of cases is it's shifted people's behavior. So if you can't light up at your desk the way people could once upon a time, these days it's more the case of you go outside to a designated smoking area, and that often involves going out at the same time with, you know, maybe the handful of people at work who smoke. So suddenly it's not just a way of warding off nicotine withdrawal symptoms, but it's an opportunity to socialize, to get some support, to get a break from work. And, you know, two out of those three things are pretty basic to functioning well as human beings. We don't want to lose those. Mm. So now with a number of people across the state who have been out of their traditional workplaces, you know, in some cases for months, like folks at the university, you've got a chance to disrupt that whole pattern. And particularly so because there are a lot of people who choose not to smoke in their homes. So there's associations there that essentially you get to bypass and may be able to eliminate some of those habitual triggers for having a cigarette.
As you look at more closures with bars and nightclubs, diminished population going out to bars and nightclubs, that too might have an impact on the number of people smoking.
Absolutely. I don't think it's quite as intense as it was before, you know, taverns became smoke-free in Wisconsin, which was a huge step forward. But certainly that's a situation where a lot of people, even if they have to step outside the physical establishment to smoke, would be doing that, especially if alcohol was involved. And again, that's a high-risk situation that people, in some cases, whether they want to or not, when taverns are closed, it's just not available to them. And so you're taking away some of the things that produce the strongest urges, or we know in a lot of cases contribute to people who have quit recently relapsing back to smoking.
What are the biggest culprits for relapse?
It's changed over time. Like we were saying a moment ago, certainly the not being able to light up inside in taverns has been a big part, but we have seen some consistency over the years too when we've tracked what's difficult for people, and a very large percentage of relapses involve people drinking alcohol. Because there's a real negative synergy there. Not only does it increase the strength of urges and cravings that people have, but, you know, if they've had more than a couple drinks, they may not be particularly well prepared to cope with that. We also know that, you know, negative emotions, feeling sad, feeling anxious, feeling isolated, those are all significant contributors, and they have not been in short supply these last few months.
We're talking with Doug Jorenby, clinical psychologist and professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We're looking at quitting nicotine amid the pandemic and the challenges around it. Have you relapsed back into smoking or vaping during the pandemic? What triggered it? What do you want to ask about how to quit? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Doug, you know, some people are what you would call casual smokers, smoking on special occasions. Is that a slippery slope? When does that become a habit?
Yeah, those people are actually quite rare. We've had the opportunity to study some cohorts of people here at UW-Madison, you know, particularly folks who are going through the undergrad experience, and found that people who consistently say only smoke on weekends or only smoke at parties are not daily smokers are actually a pretty small percentage of the whole population. And during that kind of pivotal phase when folks are in their early to mid-20s, most of them transition out either to stop smoking completely. About a third of them will escalate into daily smoking, and then a smaller percentage just keep going on. Now, I should qualify that by saying that all that work was done before vaping entered the picture, and that has changed things in a number of ways as well.
Well, let's talk about vaping. What have you seen emerge as the vapers, become much more popular at whole age ranges, from young kids to later adults?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard to believe with everything that's happened recently, but it was almost exactly a year ago, and kind of in many ways starting here in Wisconsin, that there was a tremendous concern about the emergence of cases of vaping-related pulmonary illness, what eventually ended up with the awkward acronym EVALI. Folks at the Children's Hospital in Milwaukee were some of the first to identify clusters of people that developed very severe lung disease and, unfortunately, in many cases, died. And that actually spread out nationwide. So that was an extreme example, but it certainly brought home a couple of important points. One, that vaping is something that's going on across the spectrum. It's often presented as something that's mostly about younger people, and there's certainly an element of truth to that, but in no way is it exclusive to young people. Unfortunately, there were people in their 50s and older that died of EVALI. It also made it very evident that while we're talking in the context of nicotine here, and certainly a lot of the products out there for vaping include nicotine, sometimes users aren't aware of that. But the technology is relatively agnostic. And when all was said and done, the smoking gun really seemed to be people that were using that vaping technology to get cannabis, and there were contaminants in the e-juice supply that were related to some of the worst cases of EVALI.
Well, let's bring in a call now. Jacob is with us from Eau Claire this morning. Hi, Jacob.
Hello.
Hi.
So my question for the guest is, some cigarettes like the Marlboros have like 60, 70 additives, some of them being rat poison. And so I was wondering if your guest knew anything about something like the American Spirit brand is organic tobacco. And I was wondering if like that would be quote unquote better for you.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's one I've heard many, many times over the years from folks. And it is hard to believe that adding elements. It's interesting you cited Marlboro because they're one of the most infamous cases, not with rat poison, but with adding ammonia to the tobacco, which increases the bioavailability of it. In a sense, it makes it easier for people to become dependent on it. Unfortunately, even tobacco products that don't have a lot of extra chemicals added to them doesn't really seem to make a big difference in terms of the classic health risks involved with smoking, things like heart disease, lung disease, risk for cancer in various locations. We obviously don't know anything specifically about the relationship of type of tobacco to COVID because it's so new, the work hasn't been done. But it doesn't appear that that's particularly a safe alternative to traditional commercial cigarettes.
Jacob, thank you for the call. There was also this early on thinking that vaping could be a substitute for cigarette smoking. What do you see there?
Yeah, well, we've really seen a mixed bag with that. Clearly, that's something that's very attractive to people who are smoking, dependent on tobacco. And the interesting thing is, the one thing we can say with great consistency about vaping is the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. has never allowed companies that make vaping products, e-cigarettes, to claim that they're an effective treatment. Mm. But despite that, there's immense appeal to people. And what we find in the real world is it's very common that people who are smoking cigarettes will get an e-cigarette with the idea that they're going to transition to vaping. Unfortunately, in most cases, what happens is they cut back on their cigarettes, which is probably good in the bigger sense, but they don't stop completely. And so they become what are called dual users, people who smoke typically when they can, if they can afford cigarettes, if they're in an environment that allows it, and the other times that they vape. And so in some ways, especially as we're learning that there are health risks specific to vaping, it kind of becomes the worst of both worlds.
Mm. We're talking about quitting smoking during the pandemic with clinical psychologist Doug Jornby. He heads up clinical services for the UW-Madison Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Have you relapsed back into smoking or vaping during the pandemic? What is causing it? What do you want to ask about how to quit? How are you helping a friend or a family member recover from a nicotine addiction? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Doug Jornby here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to talking about addiction to cigarettes and vaping and steps to quit during the pandemic. We have UW-Madison clinical psychologist Doug Jornby, who stays with us. Let's take another call now. Joe is joining us from Star Lake this morning. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thanks for doing this show. We've had members of our own family die as a result of tobacco use. So I had a question. I know the number was remarkably high of people who had premature deaths from tobacco when I was really looking at the subject, which would be in the early 2000s. I don't know what that number is now, but I thought if you could give us that number and then compare it with the number of deaths from coronavirus and compare the different reactions of society, how drastic this one has been versus how we think of tobacco as a product in the commercial world. That's my question.
Joe, thanks. Big questions there, Doug.
Yeah. Well, and to begin with, I'm sorry that, Joe, your family has had that experience of losing some people to tobacco, because it's a very difficult thing. And, you know, you can compare the numbers. Obviously, with the coronavirus, it's a moving target. We probably haven't even seen the peak yet in the U.S., much less globally, until we have a widespread effective treatment for that. It's going to be very difficult to tell. Unfortunately, we know all too well about tobacco that it year after year is just very consistent. In the U.S. alone, it's over 400,000 people that die from a variety of tobacco-related causes, most commonly heart disease, but also pulmonary diseases, cancer, strokes, other conditions that are caused by tobacco. And globally, there are places where the death toll is still climbing. The projections for China, where over half of adult males are smokers, just the lung cancer death rates alone projected out into the middle of the century are just, they're shocking when you look at what the numbers are. So you know, it's a little bit of apples and oranges, because for the most part, we're talking about people who are affecting themselves directly by smoking, although secondhand smoke or environmental tobacco smoke is also an independent risk factor for people who are choosing not to smoke but are nonetheless exposed to it. But it's a very different kind of public health scenario than we're talking about with an infectious coronavirus.
Okay. Let's bring in Greg now in Sheboygan. Greg, hi.
Hello. I'm a smoker, and I quit for 10 months and 27 days. And then this COVID thing came, and I started up again. But I'm just wondering, because I can hardly breathe. I take an inhalant, and it's really destroyed my life because I was very active in the outdoors and things like that. And it's very hard for me to do that because I have to stop every block or so and catch my breath. But either way, I'm wondering about this. When I was a kid, I used to use cigarettes, and I'd put them on a fuse of an M80, stick it on a tree, and go into the other woods and wait for the deer to all be scared out. But you can't use it as a fuse no more because they put these things in there so that it goes out. If you're not inhaling on your cigarette, you can be walking down the street with a cigarette in your hand and take a drag off, and it's not burning anymore because it went out, so that you won't start fires in your house and things like that. If you fall asleep, they made these cigarettes so they won't burn. What does that do to me? Hmm. What is that doing? What am I? I'm inhaling and something to make it inflammable. And what is this
chemical doing? Yeah. Doug, can you help us understand the construction of the cigarette?
Yeah. Well, first, I want to congratulate you on quitting for over 10 months. That is a tremendous accomplishment, and I really hope that you can kind of regroup and get back to being smoke-free, because I think definitely in terms of what you were saying about, you know, having to pause and take breaks when you're walking would help with that. And I'm also immensely entertained by your story about the M80s, because that is one way of using a cigarette I will confess I have never heard in all the decades.
Well, you run experiments, this. Doug, you know? I mean...
Yeah, well, maybe we'll have to get a dispensation to use M80s in our research. But yeah, you're absolutely right in terms of how the cigarettes, and particularly the papers that they are rolled in for commercial cigarettes, were changed. And it specifically was the case, as you said, caller, that was a deliberate decision that was made to prevent people, particularly from burning to death, because unfortunately, even though it came nowhere close to the heart attack and cancer deaths, prior to that, every year, there were always hundreds of cases of people who, you know, would fall asleep while smoking, and the cigarette that did not go out would fall on their clothing or bedding or couch and start a fire. So that was the good intention beyond that. It doesn't really add a whole lot to the risk profile, and the sad reason is that's because your basic cigarette, even before they were treated to go out when they weren't being actively smoked, it's such a chemical stew. Literally thousands of chemical compounds that are either present or created by the combustion temperatures when people are inhaling on that. And of those, there's more than 100 that are known human carcinogens. So in the scheme of things, it is really not adding much of anything to the mix.
Doug Jornby is Director of Clinical Services for the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at UW-Madison. We're talking about how to quit smoking for good. Let's bring in Rich now in Two Rivers. Hi, Rich.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my phone call. Hey, I worked in the medical field for 30 years, and I actually lost a mother that caught fire on a new mattress that we bought her. Oh. And what I'm trying to say is I have dealt with many patients over the years, and I worked in physical therapy, and I've seen doctors' responses to patients, and they typically come at them incorrectly. I mean, they come at them like, you're not supposed to smoke. Everybody knows they're not supposed to smoke. I mean, they know they don't want to spend the money, and they know it's not good for them. But the way they come at them is kind of belligerent most of the time. And I just don't know if there's a different way, you know, help them out, try to get them nicotine patches or something. I don't know. That's all I want to say.
Hoofda. Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear about your mom. It's and you're right. We know that berating people, shaming them, trying to guilt them into smoking is not an effective way. If it was just a matter of recognizing that smoking is harmful, millions of people would have quit. People, it's a very difficult dependence to overcome. People need assistance with that. And one thing I want to throw out for anyone who's listening is that there are great resources, even with all the disruption in the last couple of months. The Wisconsin Tobacco Quitline, they were doing teletreatment way before it was cool, way before the pandemic. And the great thing is that is available at no cost to anybody in the state. And all they have to do is call 1-800-QUIT-NOW, QUITNOW, or they can text the word READY, READY, to 200-400. Either way, we'll get them connected. And the quit line is available by phone, by text, by internet, right to wherever people are. They don't have to go anywhere. They can get counseling. They can get support. And they can even get 2 weeks of, as the caller was saying, nicotine patches, nicotine gum, or nicotine lozenge to help with the withdrawal and the craving that we know is so difficult for a lot of people in the early going. So if anyone out there listening is seriously thinking about making a quit attempt, it's a wonderful resource, and I would encourage people to make full use of that.
Well, as we wrap up here in the last seconds, how can you as a family member or friend help that person quit and be an ally and not badger, as Rich was saying?
And the simple thing is just to ask. A three-letter word, but it makes a huge difference. Rather than assuming you know what is going to be best for that person, ask them, what would be supportive? Do you want me to check in and see how you're doing, or do you want me to leave that at your initiative? Worlds apart, but it makes a huge difference, and it varies from person to person. So ask them what will be best for them.
Doug, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Doug Jornby is Director of Clinical Services for the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at UW-Madison. He's a clinical psychologist and professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We have a link to the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line at WPR.org/mornings, and that number is 800-QUIT-NOW. Coming up, it's On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.